Good, yeah.
I guess one of the things that also needed to be raised and to add to my conversation on schools and education on the Navajo is that, yes, it was hard to transform education from federal boarding schools away from the reservation back to the Navajo Nation on the Navajo Reservation. Because what I saw was a gradual parental involvement that grew out of that federal policy of establishing schools on Indian reservation. And it was a tough time period where we saw, for example, for many years, the Navajo people were sending their children off reservation. Many, many years, and I was a product of that. And the parents never really had a role. They sent their kids away from the family environment 9 months out of a year. So the parents didn't have us except for 3 months out of a year. And so in the long run, who's going to win out in terms of influencing their children? Of course, the federal government, what they were trying to do, is going to win out because they have us for 9 months and our Indian parents only had us for 3 months. And so that was that kind of a dilemma that took place. And then all of a sudden for the federal government to turn right around and say, we're going to get ourselves out of educating the Indian students away from the reservation boarding school. We're going to begin building schools back on your own territory, back on your reservation. Now you have to learn how to participate in the running of schools, in the teachings of your own children. And that's your responsibility. And the Navajo parents had a hard time dealing with that issue because they really didn't know what the non-Indian people were saying to them and why they were saying that. I guess on the downside was maybe someone of a Navajo, a traditional upbringing, thinking that that's an insult because, yes, we love our children and we love to have them here, but why are you still telling us how we should educate our children when you're, on one hand, you're telling us that we now need to be responsible for our own children, but yet you're still telling us as parents what we should tell them, how we should teach them, what they should learn. So the insult was probably back on the other foot. And so I saw some difficult times with the Navajo parents trying to understand that dilemma. And of course, when Navajo Nation began taking a full control of their own educational institution and systems in the local community, they went at it 100% once that was understood. And I guess the best evidence in terms of how that transformation was done was the teaching of Navajo culture, language, and history by the local institution. And some may say that what kind of evidence do you have to show that? One of the outstanding thing that I have been seeing during the last several years when I go out and visit the schools, for example, just this year I had an opportunity to go into a class, at the various high school, starting at Gray Hills High School, Tuba City High School, Monument Valley High School in Kayenta, and Monument Valley High in Utah, Shiprock High School, Window Rock, Ganado, Navajo Prep, Crown Point High School, Tohatchee High School, Gallup High. Going into those high schools on the Navajo, this is only for this year, my own involvement. One of the things that is so outstanding that hit you is that anytime you talk to the youngsters, the young people that are going to those institutions, when they introduce themselves, they don't introduce themselves only simply using their name. Mm-hmm. That's secondary, using your English name. But the first thing they say is, I am this clan. Mm-hmm. My father's clan is this. And my grandfather's clan, the maternal grandma's clan is this. And that's the first thing they see. They say to me when they're in the process of introducing themselves. And then they say, I want to go to your school at ASU, and I want to know what kind of classes you offer, and what kind of scholarship and dormitory program do you have. So that's the first thing that they tell you. And, you know, and they're very proud of saying that, mm-hmm. very proud of saying that. You could have never heard that 30 years ago. Navajo youngsters wouldn't tell you that. They wouldn't know. They wouldn't really know, because the whole educational institution, the system, was trying to get them out of their Navajo-ness mm-hmm. into modern white ways of life and education that they were imposing on the Indian students. And so by visiting these schools, that's what I hear. And the second thing they tell you about is these cultural instructions and Navajo history. They'll tell you that maybe there's less of that than the clan system, but the fact that they're making an effort, the fact that they know, they may not know all the detail, they may not know the dates, mm-hmm. they may not know all the things that happen specifically to Navajo people, but they know that there's a history. Navajo history in the Lawn Walk, Navajo history mm-hmm. on all of these other events that took place. Now, for me, that's a great progress that the Navajo Nation is making, because if we keep that up for the next 10, 20, 30 years, you're going to really have a nation unto itself, a nation that is self-determined, a nation that really understands where it has been, in a nation that really, really understand where it wants to go. So I really, really think that Navajo has a future. Yes, we hear a lot about drug involvement. Yes, we hear a lot about alcohol and the meth that has gone onto the Navajo Nation among the youth. You know, those are man-made things. Mm-hmm. Those are problems. They're also challenges. And I think on the meth controversy on the Navajo, the Navajo people really rose up in arms this year, last 2 or 3 years, and they're really fighting it very effectively. And so it's going to take those kinds of community involvement mm-hmm. To get these kinds of terrible things that are happening to the Navajo people, local schools and local community. It's up to them to get rid of that. No one's going to get rid of them for them. And so they're basically involved in effectively dealing with that. And so there's a lot of community cohesiveness mm-hmm. Based on what is happening at the local school. Many, many of the community activities really revolve in many cases around the school mm-hmm. and what the school is able to achieve. And I'll give you one or two good example. In the 1970s and 1980s, when the Navajo people in Tuba City began taking the full control of their local schools at Tuba City High, they went all the way to supporting their high school sports program. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to high school basketball games and football games. And I remember going to cross-country mm-hmm. and track meets. And those kids were so proud of themselves. Mm-hmm. And the Tuba City High School women's basketball team took the state championship maybe 4 or 5 times during that 20-year, 15-year period. where Tuba City was number one. They won the state tournament. And to have that state tournament here at the America West Arena, where the Phoenix Suns professional basketball team plays, they have those state tournament, basketball tournament at that gymnasium. And Navajo people would come by the large numbers, fans, families, relatives, and they would fill that place up with Navajo supporters. And it was very hard for the people here in Phoenix to understand that, to understand why the Navajo people would drive 300 miles to come to support their high school basketball team. And so the way I saw that was that there's a big community pride. Mm-hmm. There's a tremendous amount of support for the local school in those communities. And Navajo people, you know, love their children, love their grandchildren. They go any distance. Mm-hmm. How far they drove didn't matter. How much it cost to get there didn't matter. The fact was that they wanted to support their school. They wanted to support their children. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happens. That's what happens when you educate and motivate the parents enough so that they go all the way to support the activities of their local sports program. Now, let's transfer that over to the city of Phoenix. You know, I live in a school district here in Phoenix, and it's a big 5A school. Mm-hmm. They don't get that number at their basketball game, even at the state meet, mm-hmm. The state tournament. They don't get that number. And, you know, they're probably maybe 1,000 or 2,000 at the most that I have seen by non-Indian teams. But with Navajo, it's not unusual to see 14,000, 15,000 people at these games. And so I think people should just learn from that, that when you get the Indian people involved in supporting some worthwhile things like basketball games and supporting their children, you know, they go out 100% and support that. And I'm only using Tuba City as an example. Well, that happened with Window Rock High School, that happened with Monument Valley High School, and this year with Ganado. The girls' basketball team went all their way and took the state champion. And so it's something that, you know, the Navajo people are very proud of. And if you look at New Mexico, look what Shiprock High School did back in the 70s, you know, when they had that tremendous basketball team and the whole community of Shiprock going over to the pit in Albuquerque where University of New Mexico Lobo basketball team plays. And, you know, during the state tournament, that place is just full to capacity with Navajo supporters. And it was really, really something to see. And for me, as an educator and as an observer, what the Navajo people are really, really sold on is this self-determination. And I'm using only the sports program as an example. And I'm following one other thing that's happened in the last 2 years. For example, last night I was reading about the spelling bee that just took place at the national level here about a week, 2 weeks ago. And there were some Navajo kids that went all the way to Washington, D.C. And they participated. Sure, they lost out and they got eliminated in the second round or so. You know, but the thing about it is that we're up there. Mm-hmm. We're up there. We're on the verge of having one of our Navajo youngsters become a national champion in spelling bee program and contests. And so it's the Navajo people and the Navajo children are the future of the Navajo Nation. And they're doing all of these things because the Navajo parents are giving them that that desire, that support that they really, really need to do something very well in the community. And they're, the Navajo kids are very proud of doing all of these things. Look at what happened in the community of Pinion, where you have a young Navajo eighth grader, Garrett Yazzie, and what he was able to invent to help out his mother to reduce her electricity bill by inventing a water heater and a gadget that he used to heat his home, his trailer, and then for ABC television to come out in May and bill in this nice, beautiful home for him and his mother. And that's going to get a lot of national attention, and people are going to view that in terms of what this young Navajo boy was able to invent, just simply because he was really dedicated to his mother and dedicated to looking at the overall problem that Navajo Nation faces. And so I look at these different events, and what Garrett Yazzie has done is not going to stop there, because the home that they built for him is all green home. That home is recycling its own water, self-contained. It's recycling its own water, and the water that they recycle is used to irrigate the little grass and other flowers that the family is growing outside of their home. And then they have a solar panel that generates electricity. They have a wind panel that also generates electricity. And as I understand it from the engineers that helped design that facility here at ASU, the solar panel plus the wind-generated power, that will produce enough to take care of their home throughout the year. And there's going to be excess power that NTUA is going to buy from him, Navajo Tribal Utility Authority, the organization that provides electrical services to homes on the Navajo Nation. And Garrett Yazzie, this eighth grade kid and now a ninth grade high school student, made a commitment by saying that I would like to have all of my excess electricity to go to my neighbors, my uncle and my aunts and my grandma and my grandpa. And so even at that young age, he has such a responsibility towards his own relatives and his own community. And whatever he invented, he was passing it around to get the result of what he was able to come up with. And when I see something like that happen, you know, that's the future of the Navajo Nation. We don't have any indication right now. For all we know is that the Navajo people might start demanding that their homes be built with solar system, with wind-powered electric-producing machinery to heat their homes. And so we may see that and may not necessarily need all that much energy that gets produced by using the coal, and because that's controversial in itself with all these power plants that we have on the Navajo Nation anyway. So the invention and the creation of what Garrett Yazzie did also, to me, is unlimited. We haven't really seen the full recognition and the full potential that this kid has in terms of what he has in mind and in terms of helping the Navajo people and the way that we live. And so that only indicates to me that the Navajo people really have what it takes to survive, what it takes to do good and do well in taking care of the other members of their family. And so I just wanted to add these pieces of information that I observe on the Navajo, and it really goes along the line of self-determination, and to have a nation that we can be proud of. We need more of the kind of activities that is fully supported by the Navajo parents and Navajo students.
Okay, very good.
Okay, 12 o'clock, turn it off again, let's talk.